sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm Mark Crutcher, as you heard, and I'm joined by one of my usual suspects.
Hello, everybody.
Lurking nearby, Sarah Waits. And
speaking of lurking, that's a good intro and segue into what we're talking about today.
Lots of things going on in the pro-life movement, but we want to take a little time out here and talk about a subject that's dear to our heart, and that's just talking about... the sheer lunacy of the things that go on inside the abortion industry, and just by pro-aborts in general. And again, we want to invite everybody to go to our website, peopleofchoice.com, and to see...
You'll never be the same afterwards.
No, you won't be.
Speaking as the person who had to help put stuff together.
And if you're feeling depressed, don't go on there, because this will totally wreck your whole view of humanity. I mean, when you look and see the kind of things that they do. But anyway, we want to talk about some of the wacky things that go on inside the abortion industry.
Yeah,
and some of them are funny, some of them are not.
Yeah, you don't want to laugh. It's one of those tragically funny, like either cry or laugh.
Guilty laugh.
Yeah. But I have a file on my computer, and it's called Crazy But True. And that's going to be kind of the theme of this episode. I think if we're going to start this off right, we have to start off with a Chinese bandit.
Oh.
I don't know why it's one of my favorites, but it's one of
my... Raymond Chowry, if I remember the name correctly. Actually, he came from pretty wealthy parents, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And he was somewhat of a doofus. And he wanted to get in the medical community. And
Somehow
or another, they got him into med school. And he graduated and set up a practice, but he couldn't get it going. He was a bad doctor, and he had malpractice problems and everything. So
he's probably one of those C equals degree, or if his parents paid enough, it was F equals just fine.
And eventually, I think he killed somebody. I can't remember what the situation was. I think somebody died under his watch. And so he got out of the medical community.
Good decision.
And he decided to go into being a professional wrestler. And he
talk about a career switch.
Right. So he wrestled he was one of these guys that dressed up in a costume and had a...
Kind of like the luchadors, right?
A mask on and all this other. He was the Chinese Bandit.
That was his wrestler name.
That was his wrestling name. So he wrestles under the name of the Chinese Bandit. And apparently he wasn't very good, didn't draw much of a crowd or anything. Or either that, or the people in professional wrestling said, we have too high standards for this guy. So he didn't make it. So when he got thrown out of professional wrestling, he decided to go back into the medical community. And of course, who's the people that will take you no matter what your history is?
Let me think about
if
this.
You've got
I'm
going to
say
skin,
it rhymes could... with Smismortion.
So the abortion industry took him back in. He went to work at an abortion mill here in Texas, and promptly killed a 15-year-old girl.
Mm.
So that kind of ended his career. If I remember correctly, he almost had criminal charges brought against him. There was some reason to believe that he might have been justified to have criminal charges against him. I don't think it ever happened. But anyway, he evaporated. I never heard what happened to him after that. He just kind of disappeared. But the old Chinese Bandit.
I don't know why. It just tickles me, but... abortionist / wrestler named the Chinese Bandit, and just gets me a little bit. So,
well, I think professional wrestling has much higher moral standards and just general standards than the abortion industry has. The professional wrestling threw him out. The abortion industry said, oh, we'll take you. Come over here.
A number of these things that I have in my notes are from Lime 5. And if you haven't read Lime 5, I recommend you go do that. It's a uncensored look at the abortion industry. And of course, we'll have the link for that in the description below. But I want to go ahead and talk about the bizarre behavior that is found inside the abortion industry. And right at the top of the list, here's a deal of a Louisiana abortionist who put a aborted baby that was wrapped in blue paper inside a surgical glove, stick that inside another surgical glove, and then he would stand in the hall speaking with assistants and toss it up in the air and catch it as if it was a ball. He would also leave dead babies just lying around the office.
We had one that we documented in Lime 5, and it was a medical board examination of it. At this abortion clinic, they had a break room like we've got, a lunch room.
Mm-hmm.
And they stored dead babies in the refrigerator
Next to their food.
Their food in the same refrigerator, because they had run out of places to store them. They weren't able to get rid of them. And when they ran out, instead of just setting them over in a corner and letting them rot and stink up the whole building, they put them in the refrigerator. Ugh. And so you might go in the refrigerator, get a sandwich you brought in that morning, and there's a clear glass jar with a bunch of baby parts in it.
I noticed repeatedly from stuff that I've read that they all have this really bizarre sense of humor about aborted babies and their parts and everything.
Right. Well, they blame babies for the situation that they're in. And we've heard some of them actually say that.
Yeah.
That these babies are responsible for me being considered the washout and the loser of the medical community and having to live the life that I live. We had a case where, again, we were able to get the documentation from a State Board of Medical Examiner's report of them playing wishbones with bones from the babies they had aborted. We had another case down in Florida where they would torment the pro-lifers out on the sidewalk by going up to a window that was right next to the sidewalk where the pro-lifers were picketing. Mm-hmm. And they would hold up the eyes of babies that they had killed and have a little sign there that says, "Here's looking at you, kid." And they'd hold up these eyes. Mm-hmm.
There was another one that was in Line 5 that was talking about how a patient's mother brought in a 3-inch fetal head that her daughter had passed after the abortion inside a milk carton. I guess they just put it in whatever they had nearby. And the abortionist kept it, and he put it in the refrigerator with a sign taped to it saying, "Hi, do you remember me?" as a homecoming surprise for an employee who had been away on vacation.
This is the sort of garbage that goes on in these places. And for people that think they're just like any other medical environment, you're fooling yourself. There's nothing normal about these places, nothing mm-hmm. normal about these people that work in them. They're all whacked out. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of research on this back when I wrote Line 5 years ago. And even their own people have written articles talking about the nightmares that these people have. Mm-hmm. And this one abortionist said, "I see these babies coming to me in my sleep." Mm-hmm. And they look at me with ancient eyes. I don't know what that means, but
I think I do. You know, they say the eyes are the windows to the soul, and you can kind of see someone's maturity and wisdom. And if there's eyes indicating that kind of wisdom in a baby, it would freak you out.
Okay. I don't know if that qualifies as ancient eyes, but it's as good an explanation I've heard from
you. We're getting all Freudian in here.
Right. And just their medical practices. We had one of our malpractice cases. A young lady in, I think it was in Colorado, had an abortion. They reached in with the Beer's forceps to grab the head of the baby. And instead, the forceps punctured a hole in the woman's uterus, which is a fairly common.
It happens, yeah.
Yeah, it's the second most common abortion injury after retained fetal parts is mm-hmm. perforated uterus. Anyway, he didn't know he'd perforated the uterus, apparently, and he keeps pushing, and he grabs what he thought was the head of the baby and pulls it out. He pulled out over 3 feet of her intestine onto the table.
How do you keep pulling? Like, it shouldn't take you that long to know that you've got an intestine.
Clinic.
They don't look like a baby.
No, you're stupid, and you work in an abortion clinic.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, now, when you perforate a uterus, every physician in the world knows the first thing you do is stop everything you're doing and get this woman to emergency care. Mm-hmm. They didn't do that. He stuffed the intestines back into the vaginal canal, and I guess he thought this was just going to go away or something. It didn't. Of course, they sent her to the hospital. She wound up with a colostomy. She lost a bunch of her lower intestine. You know, we don't tell these stories, and we didn't write about them in Line 5, and we don't report on them here to gross people out. They are gross.
Oh, yeah, no.
But I get sick and tired of hearing people talking about how the abortion industry is some sort of addendum to the mainline legitimate medical community. It's not. Mm-hmm. They're so outside the mainline medical community. Things go on in here that other doctors wouldn't even remotely consider happening.
Yeah.
And yet they happen on a regular basis.
Well, I wrote about an article, the media's portrayal of abortion in television and movies, and it's never portrayed in the television and movies like real life. It's very sanitized. The place is always clean. Everything's always professional.
These are the highest quality people in the world.
No.
If you want to see a good example of how even they understand how low the standards are, mm-hmm. we had a malpractice case one time, and it was out of Colorado, I remember that, where a woman had developed a septic infection, mm-hmm. which is not uncommon at all. If they leave tissue behind and that tissue becomes necrotic, it can develop sepsis. And women can die from that. We've got cases of women dying from that. But anyway, this woman didn't die, but she wound up in the emergency room. And when she went to the emergency room, they did a DNC on her and pulled out the head of the baby. And the head of the baby had been left behind. She filed a malpractice suit. In the trial, the abortionist admitted that he knew he had left the head behind. He said, I had tried to grab number one, which is what they call the head of the baby. Instead of saying the head of the baby, they say, I had tried to grab number one, and I was unsuccessful in grabbing it. So I stopped the procedure because I had a lot of patients waiting. So he said, I stopped the procedure and dismissed her, and I knew she'd pass it at home. Well, it turns out she didn't pass it at home. And some women do go home and pass the head of the baby.
But not every woman.
No.
You're taking a gamble when you're just leaving it to chance.
But you're only taking a gamble with her life, not your own. And he admitted that he knew he had left the head of the baby because when they looked at the parts in the Petri dish, the head was missing.
Yeah.
He said, I couldn't get it, so I just went ahead and dismissed her because I had a whole waiting room full of patients. He was found innocent of violating the minimum standard of medical care.
You're kidding.
No, no. He was found not guilty. And the reason for it was they were able to produce other abortionists who said that it was not below the minimum standard of medical care in an abortion clinic to leave the head of the baby behind. That was not below the standard of care. If you did that in any other field of medicine, you'd never be able to find doctors who would come in and be expert witnesses to testify for you that that matched the standard of care. You'd never find that. But in the abortion industry, they have reduced what they call the community-based standard of care to such a low level. You're now in the position in America where you can't hardly get under that bar. There's not hardly anything that they can do while doing an abortion on a woman that will get them beneath that standard of care. That is the reason, because of tort reform, which has created that situation, pushed by Republicans, by the way, and I was fighting with Republican Party leadership at that time and telling them, if you push this tort reform, the people that you will protect the most are the abortion industry. But the Republicans were so beholden to the American Medical Association, who was pushing tort reform.
Probably to protect the abortion industry.
Most likely. Who knows? But it didn't matter whether they protected the abortion industry or not. That was the result of it. They were going to do it. But the standard of care is so low now, it's almost impossible to violate. And that's why we went from having an abortion malpractice campaign here
to almost nothing.
To nothing.
Overnight.
We were involved in over 2,000 cases at one level or another. On the average, at the time when we were really rocking and rolling with this, we would have 200 cases that were active at the time that we were providing litigation support to. We haven't provided litigation support now to a case in years. And I have attorneys call me all the time and they say, I have a patient of a certain abortionist who's come to me and she's got X problem. And can you provide help for me to show how we can show they violated the standard of care? And I'm having to tell the guy, look, the problem is they didn't violate the standard of care. Everybody thinks that the whole medical industry has a universal standard of care. They don't. Even non-abortion situations, they don't always have the same standard of care. But some things are universal. Some things are so beneath, but not in the abortion industry.
Anything goes.
I mean, you read in Lyme 5, for example, and all this stuff came from State Board of Medical Examiner reports. An abortionist that his staff admitted that there were times when he would come in and go to work, walk into the procedure room to do an abortion with no shoes on and no shirt. He's just standing there in his slacks, and that's it. Another one, the staff talks about how the place would be so nasty, there'd be dried blood on the floor, and he'd bring his dog in to lick it up. And he'd be doing this while they're doing procedures. We had others where, you know what a laminaria is.
Yeah, for people who don't know, when you're doing a later procedure, you have to have your uterus dilated.
Well, even earlier when you have to have it done some, but even later when you have to have a lot of dilation done. And they will stick these seaweed sticks.
And they'll absorb moisture and they'll expand and expand, they'll dilate
you. There's such a small margin of profit in doing these abortions that some of these guys would start reusing those sticks from one woman to the next. Reusing dilators, metal dilators. The list just goes on and on, but
you would never accept this standard of care from anywhere else.
You wouldn't accept this from a vet.
And just to prove how crazy some of this stuff is, in Lyme 5, there was one abortionist who was found guilty of an outrageous number of charges. There was 65 counts of gross negligence, 29 permitting, aiding, abetting unlicensed persons, which means they let people do medical stuff who was not qualified, 90 counts practicing fraudulently, 65 gross incompetence, 139 unprofessional conduct. Okay. When she later appealed to have her license reinstated, because apparently
this is not bad enough.
This is not bad enough. She insisted that she had committed the crimes because of a domineering husband who manipulated her through voodoo.
Really? That's the people we're talking about. And you know, you've often heard me say, nobody goes through the rigors of a medical school education and then goes through an internship and a residency and all the hoops you have to jump through to become a physician to wind up at Planned Parenthood doing abortions or any other abortion mill. This is where you go when your skills are so low that you either can't get malpractice insurance or you can't get a practice going or you commit crimes that winds you up maybe losing your license. So nobody aspires to be an abortionist. They're relegated to being an abortionist because they'll take whoever walks in.
Yeah.
That's what they have to do because the vast majority of physicians in this country will not have anything to do with elective abortions. They won't get involved in it. So you're stuck. And even we've got quotes from some of these people saying, we only get the washouts and the losers of medicine. That's the only people that will come to work in these abortion clinics.
Yeah. And some of the stuff we're not going to go over because we just did an episode on this. One of the things that plagues the abortion industry is, of course, is rape and sexual assault inside the industry. And we'll have the link to that episode that we did. But I just wanted to cover this one little snippet from the report. And that is Yvette Gradwall was one of the people listed in there. And she was an abortion clinic nurse and a supervisor. And after she had her breast augmentation, she began exposing herself to employees and urging them to fondle her. As if this is like normal workplace behavior.
Right. Well, the surprising thing is, Sarah, in this environment, it is normal. You know, what constitutes normal is what's normal, right? And these people are fully aware that nothing is off the table.
But I think I've saved some of the best for last. There's other stuff here that we're obviously not going to get enough time to get to, so I'm not even going to try.
Nor the stomach to get to them.
Yeah, because some of them are pretty dark, so I'm going to leave those. But I want to talk about the interview that we did with three clinic workers from Texas abortionist Douglas Carpin. There's a several-part DVD that we did called An American Abortion Clinic, and we'll put the link to that in the description. Part one is available on the internet for people to watch. And it's
For free.
Talking about how babies were born, and then they were killed outside the womb.
Right. And the graphic ways they were killed. It was pretty disgusting.
But there's also a part two that talks about some other things that are going on in there. And part three, which we'll talk about in a minute, is an interview with actually one of his patients. Now, in part two, the clinic workers were talking about how he had injured a woman during an abortion on her. And I've actually got the clip here so that y'all can listen to this from the clinic workers' lips and not ours. You ready for this?
Probably not.
Here we go.
She was a Hispanic lady. I want to say she was
Mexican.
How many weeks was she? Was she past
24? Yeah,
I think she was past the 24 weeks. And she said, look, I have the money cash. Like, I just want to get this done. And he was trying to pull out the fetus. And as he was putting it in, he pulled her cervix thinking it was, it was like an arm or something. So he started spraying the betadine because it was bleeding so much. Her cervix was bleeding so much. And he said, damn it, I pulled out her damn cervix. How did I do this? It's because y'all not giving me enough room to see in there. You see, she's already, her cervix is so tight. And he was so mad. He started throwing stuff everywhere, and he was just going crazy.
Yeah, she was ready to quit that day because she called me pissed off.
Okay, but he had actually pulled her cervix out.
Yeah, he pulled it out. He ripped it apart.
And wasn't going to tell her.
And he had said himself, he said, this lady, she probably won't be able to have kids anymore after this.
Yeah, she was not. And he didn't want to tell her because it was a Spanish-speaking lady.
He felt because she was Spanish, she was just stupid anyway.
Yeah, she didn't need to know what was going on with herself.
What can she do? And it was told her to go to the hospital,
yeah,
right?
Crystal told her to tell her.
And I told her, you need to go to the hospital. She was in so much pain. She didn't know what happened to her. She didn't know what they did to her.
That's normal for them to have pain after the procedure, but not excruciating pain, just some cramping kind of when you have a bad cycle.
Well, yeah, somebody pulls your cervix out.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be painful.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think he knew how to sew that lady up because
he doesn't.
It looked like somebody just got up the other piece of her cervix and just stapled it on her.
Just stapled it on her.
And one of the key things here is, they said, and one of these girls was Hispanic herself, mm-hmm. said because she was Hispanic, he knew she couldn't do anything about it, which meant he probably thought she was illegal. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not even going to tell her that mm-hmm. I pulled her cervix out. But this is typical of what you get because these are the kind of people mm-hmm. that wind up working in abortion clinics. That's just the way it is.
Yep.
And it's never going to change.
And there was lots of things that they talked about in there. Like how Carpin would leave women on the table with a speculum and then go across the hall and have a sandwich.
And then come back. Right. and she's in the stirrups with the speculum.
And one of the parts of the interview, they were talking about how drugs was a big problem, that anybody could pull drugs. And so there were a lot of people around the clinic mm-hmm. who were addicted. I do think we need to mention how big of a problem drugs is.
Oh, it's a major issue.
For people who are in this industry.
Well, one of the things that we found out in our old malpractice lawsuits mm-hmm. is how common it was for these abortionists to sign prescription pads blank and just leave them laying around and anybody could fill out whatever they wanted. That was not uncommon at all. We saw that in a ton of cases. And we also see that a lot of these people are taking drugs. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. You know, we talked about on a previous show about how when the Nazis were shooting their victims rather than gassing them.
Yeah.
That the executioners were spinning out of control. That was the reason they went to gas to begin with. Mm-hmm. When you put men in a situation where they spend all day long shooting people in the back of the head that they don't know and they don't hate, eventually you destroy the people who are doing the shooting.
Yeah.
And that's what the Nazis found. That's why they changed over to using gas.
It's the same dynamic here.
The same dynamic is true in the abortion industry. These people get whacked out. And there's two primary consequences of that. One of them is a lot of these people are...
Doing drugs. Yeah.
And they're very unstable people to begin with. And secondly, an incredibly high turnover rate. Mm-hmm. If you go to work in most abortion clinics in this country and you're there 6 months, mm-hmm. you're the senior employee. The turnover rate is astronomical. They don't make any money. The working conditions are horrific. The things that you have to see mm-hmm. are terrible.
And then if you actually wind up staying, we saw a number of cases where abortion clinic workers, particularly abortionists, would lash out at the woman. There's one thing here we have from Lyme 5 where it says, according to a suit filed against a female abortionist, she told a patient to drop her pants and get up on the table, and she performed an abortion without anesthesia. When the patient screamed in pain, the abortionist told her to shut up or they would gag her and have her put in a psycho ward. The abortionist had a nurse hold her hands over the patient's mouth. After the ordeal, the abortionist said, "Here are your pants, put them on and get out of here. This will make you think twice before having sex without a contraceptive."
Right. Yeah, I remember that case very well. That's a very well-known female abortionist that the abortion industry thought hung the moon. Mm. We could go on. This session could go on all day.
But let's get back to just go over briefly the interview with one of Carpin's patients, because this, I think, is a story for the ages.
Well, it's so comical. If I weren't sitting there listening to her, uh-huh. and she was totally believable, she didn't even want to be there.
Yeah.
If somebody just told me this and I didn't know anything about the abortion industry, I'd say, look, no, but that's not possible. But some of the things she said were just...
What's that old saying? Like, it's too crazy for somebody to make up?
Right.
So the woman went to Carpin for a chemical abortion. He does the chemical. Now, based on what we know about the abortion industry and the drugs that they're giving them, is that they're not following the recommendations from the manufacturer, mm-hmm. and they're not giving enough.
Right.
Well, guess what? The chemical abortion didn't work. And so it's obvious to me, I don't know what your interpretation of this, but based on the way she's saying this, Carpin is trying to pressure her to get an abortion to do a surgical. Mm-hmm. His wife is pressuring her to get this. Mm-hmm. I think they're terrified of a lawsuit that she could bring against them.
She had one. All right.
And so they're pressuring her. And then, of course, they expect her to pay for the surgical abortion, right?
Right.
But Carpin's wife kept on changing the amount of how much the abortion was going to be. And just to show you the depths of the
depravity,
not just the depravity, but the extent that they were willing to go through just to get her in the clinic, Carpin's wife actually picked her up and brought her to the clinic.
Right. Yeah.
And they were calling her from the clinic at like midnight, trying to arrange this stuff and make sure she got in. Like I say, she kept on changing the amount.
Well, they knew she had a lawsuit.
Yeah. And so when she gets there and it's time that they want her to give the money up front, Well, she goes up to the receptionist, and the receptionist is trying to tell her not to pay because because it's their mistake. She's like, no, 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 you don't pay. Just tell them that you didn't have it with you. Despite the fact that Carpin's wife had been checking, she said she kept on asking her over and over, you have the money, right? Do you have the money? So she keeps on trying to pay, and the clinic worker won't let her pay. And so she finally winds up telling Carpin's wife that she must have forgot the money and that a friend is going to bring it to her.
Her boyfriend or something's going to bring it, yeah.
And it gets crazier than that. So Carpin's wife is telling you better get the money, and Carpin is saying you better get the money, or I'm going to have my wife beat you up.
Right.
Like, this is bizarre. And so she's telling the clinic worker that she's scared now because people are threatening to beat her up. And she's like, still like, no, don't pay, don't pay. And you know this girl's thinking, well, it's not you getting threatened here.
Right.
And so she has to go through this whole, like, she hides the money in her phone, and then she has a friend come up to the clinic so she can discreetly hand the money over to the person and hand it back to her like she's gotten the money. It's just, it's insane. And then they do the abortion. She pays. She thinks, okay, maybe I'm done. And she's home. She's taking off her jacket. They left the IV in her arm.
Right.
And so she calls the clinic, like, you know, what should I do about this? Should I go to the hospital?
And
go to the doctor?
No, don't go to the emergency room.
They told her not to go to the emergency room. Better yet.
They told her a park to go to, and they would have somebody from the clinic come there and take the IV out of her at the park. Right. This story, you listen to this thing, and you think, the best comedy writer in the world couldn't write this.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point, Carpin's wife says, if you don't show up with that money, I'm going to whip your ass.
Yeah.
That was literally what the girl told her.
Yeah, because she was so irate when the girl said, you know, I don't have the money, because the clinic worker's telling them, like, don't pay the money.
It was amazing.
And there's so much shady, shoddy behavior that they did in this deal that, you know, she demanded to have her paperwork. And, of course, patients' rights, you're entitled to your paperwork, so they give it to her. And then out of some huge coincidence, around that same time, her house is broken into,
right.
And it doesn't seem to be anything stolen except for the paperwork.
That's all that's taken from the house.
Oh, and then there's a knife in her pillow.
And there's a knife stuck in her pillow. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. If people think we're making it, Walt Disney didn't have an imagination this good.
No.
It's unbelievable. But anyway, there's a lot of these stories in Lime 5.
And if you don't believe us.
And they're fully documented, 100% documented.
And if you don't believe us, you need to go watch American Abortion Clinic and watch that interview with her. I'm telling you.
Yeah, now, we don't have that online.
No, you'll actually have to get the DVD
from us
but in order to watch that.
We shorten it for time.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to point out something, two things. And this is not a matter of bragging. It's just a matter of fact. I'm told that Lime 5 is the number one best-selling book in the history of the pro-life movement. We've sold well over 100,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
Most videos that you put on the internet, on YouTube or something, and we've got some like this that have been on there for 10 years and they got 3,000 views or they got 800 views or something like that. That's not uncommon. Our video from this Carpin interview down in Houston is approaching 1 million views.
It keeps approaching, but for some odd reason.
Yeah, we're fighting. Yeah.
It almost gets to 1 million views and then it drops like 80,000, 100,000. And then it goes to 1 million again and it drops again.
Yeah. You know, we know that all these social media sites are jacking with the pro-lifers.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they do not want that video going over 1 million views. Several times it's gotten right up to it. And then all of a sudden we go in and look one day and it's dropped 17,000 views.
Yeah.
Overnight.
Mm-hmm.
17,000 views just went away. Anyway. Yeah.
This is just a small snippet of the stuff that we have.
Yeah, we could do a whole book just on this kind of nonsense.
Well, to be honest, Lime 5 is kind of like a whole book on this nonsense.
Well, yeah, we can talk about a lot of serious stuff, though. But this stuff is, you know, we can laugh about it. But if you're the woman to whom all this is being done.
Oh, it's not funny.
It's not funny at all.
Most of this stuff is not funny. Even what happened to that woman who went to Carpin, it's not funny. That should not happen to anybody.
No. Well, if you went to go get your yearly checkup and the nurse there threatened to whip your ass. I mean, how weird would that be?
Yeah, no, it's just, if someone told me that, I'd be like, excuse me?
Right.
Excuse me?
You left the IV in my arm. You're going to meet me in the park?
Meet me in the park? No, you're not going to meet me in the park. I'm going to the hospital.
They specifically told her, do not go to the emergency room.
Because they were terrified.
Right. They knew she had a case against them. Anyway, you got anything else?
If you like the show, go leave a review on a platform that takes reviews, such as Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. And then make sure that you follow the podcast on one of those platforms so you don't miss an episode.
And tell your friends to watch. We need to get you guys out there helping us out. So be sure and get all your friends to watch or listen.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it.
That's it. That's all I have.
Until next Thursday, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Mm-mm, we're here to win.
Because winning is how the killing stops. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.